a sound of crashing soup cans, junk thrown around the bedroom, smashing bottles, and a bird tweet. It all came out of that opening of the closet door every Monday on National Broadcasting Company. It was 1950. There in my living room, I couldn't wait to sit down to that mahogany golden-toned lighted dial to hear Fibber McGee and Molly. It was Fibber and Molly and Foggy Williams, the local weather man, Throckmorton Gildersleeve, the pompous next-door neighbor, and it was if they sat down in our flowered, upholstered, patterned sofa, right there in front of me. Boy, that was radio. Don't Touch That Dial, celebrating 100 years of radio, is exhibited at the National Museum of Industrial History, now until November 3rd. You'll want to be a part of the event that highlights hundreds of historic radios, ephemera from the now-defunct WKAP, and listen to early radio broadcasts, creating real sound effects yourself in the art of Foley. But there's more to the National Museum of Industrial History, and to share the treasure and memories of local and national industrial achievements, we have two very special guests. This is WDIY 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we chat today with Andrea Zaya, curator of collections at the National Museum of Natural History in Bethlehem, and with Donna Acera, the guest curator and professor of communication studies at NCC. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. Welcome, Andrea, and welcome, Donna.
Thank you for having us.
I do remember those moments of sitting by that radio as a little kid. And, of course, later then it was television. But there was something very special about radio, that when you sat down and you heard voices and you heard the stories and people, the way they lived in different places, it was just magic. And it was a thing that you wanted to do every single week, mm-hmm. every Monday.
Mm-hmm. You just grabbed your imagination and then you created the pictures in your head.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm curious, given that, I mean, preparing for today and reading some of the material, we also take radio for granted in a way now. You know, I'm younger and it just was always there growing up. It's whatever it is. I thought, that's interesting. What was the impetus for this exhibit? It's fascinating to me to really take a step back and look at radio as a phenomenon and something that hasn't been with us that long.
And exactly. I think radio made us who we are as a culture. If we wouldn't have had cumulative experiences through the power of radio, you know, where would we? Mm. Where would we be? I first learned about Donna's amazing radio collection from a friend of ours, Sharon Zondag. And she told me that I really need to meet Donna and look at her radios. And so that really got the ball rolling.
And how many radios might you have, Donna?
Well, let's say I stopped counting at 100.
Wow.
Most of them are in the exhibit now, mm-hmm. but with the empty shelves in my home and the blank wall space, I've been forced to find some more radios to fill in those.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. So I might have a little problem.
Well, a good thing you didn't collect steam shovels or something like that.
Yeah.
What years do they? I mean, radio would be what, 1920s? Am I right?
Well, so we based this 100 years of radio around the incorporation of the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, which was in October of 1919. So when we were talking about this back in 2018, I said, oh, we can call it 100 years because it will be 100 years. I'm sure the former RCA folks are, you know, will be celebrating the 100 years of really just bringing all of the patents together to create this monster of a company that then controlled radio mm-hmm. in America. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of our impetus, I think, for mm-hmm. the 100 years.
And it's been open for a bit now. It runs through November. Mm-hmm. It sounds really like a really interactive exhibit as well, which is fascinating to me. And if you could talk a little bit about what I would discover there as a visitor and how have the visitors been mm-hmm. responding?
Well, the visitors can walk in, and on every third Sunday, they will see Ham Radio Live, which is going to feature an amateur radio operator at our inside of our radio shack, which was inspired by Donna's father's radio shack.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And we will be contacting people from all over the world. So that's going to be a really, really fabulous thing to do. Visitors will also learn more about the art of Foley, or making sounds in radio. They'll be able to try their hand at doing some of that in a Foley station. Mm. And then we also go through the various decades, and we invite people to actually sit down in our living room, which was provided to us by one of our sponsors, Domasi Home. And they, so we welcome people to sit down, relax, and listen to the programs.
Much Did you have any favorite radio programs that you listened to, Donna?
Growing up?
Yes.
Growing up in the 1970s, mm-hmm. if I can, you know, admit that, I listened to a guy up in Boston, Larry Glick, WBZ. And Boston was the very first station in the nation to get a license. Everyone thinks it's KDKA. They became the most famous. But Boston WBZ was the actual first station awarded the license. So I listened to a guy on, I think it was Sunday nights, the Larry Glick Show. And he had 4 hours of just nattering and, you know, people, regulars and that kind of thing. So that was the radio that I grew up listening to. And also, of course, the local stations, WAEB, with my transistor under my pillow. Yes. They would count down the top 40, and I would sing along until I fell asleep. So that was the radio. I wish that I had grown up in the Fibber McGee and Molly and the Henry Aldrich and all that. I feel like I probably am an old soul in that way, that I loved to listen to rebroadcasts of those.
Right.
It's funny, my first experience of Monty Python was not television. I never saw it. I heard it on radio late at night with a transistor tucked under my pillow, so my dad didn't know I was mm-hmm. still up. And it was almost a letdown to see it.
Yeah.
Radio is a very different experience. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it calls on your imagination in different ways.
And radio drama is really making a comeback all over, especially in Europe. That's where it's prominent.
Sure, with podcasts and,
right.
you
yes.
know.
Donna, how about you? You remember any? Howard Stern, right?
No. That was enough. Right. When I was in college, that was the radio that I was addicted to, was Howard Stern on WNBC. Yeah.
We are actually going to be featuring, for people who may have missed that experience, you know, tuning into the radio, on September 15th, we have Spirit of the Airwaves Players coming to the museum. Mm-hmm. So you will be able to come in and be in our studio audience and watch an old-time radio broadcast happen.
They're amazing
reenactors mm-hmm. that come in the costume. They put together programming throughout, like the radio, around the radio mm-hmm. dial, so you'll hear some ads, some drama, some music, that kind of thing.
Are they local? Or
they're from Reading, the Reading
area. Oh,
yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other, there's... what's coming up here? Ham Radio Live. We were talking about mm-hmm. that, a radio repair extravaganza, which kind of fascinated me.
Mm-hmm.
What would we expect from a radio repair extravaganza? If I don't have a radio to bring, what will be going on that day?
Well, if you don't have a radio to bring, but you want to see like real radio people at work, people that love radios, we have the Delaware Valley Historical
Radio Club
mm-hmm. coming up. Members from that club, they're coming up. And they will be diagnosing and helping to repair people's radios, both the inner parts, both the tubes, and also the cabinets, refinishing and restoring the cabinets. So kind of giving you a diagnosis of what you need to do, and then go home and do it on your own.
And I'm assuming this would include, like, older radios.
Yes.
Collectibles,
definitely kind of collectibles.
More so than anything,
Yeah.
And we also will have appraisals. So if you're interested in knowing if there's any value to your radio, you can bring those in and we can give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at the museum, we can see the wonderful collection of vintage and newer radios. But you're also, you've recreated, do I understand correctly, a radio WKAP at the museum?
Well, we don't have the station, but we were really fortunate to get the blinking sign, the WKAB, yes, with, you know, 150 light bulbs around it blinking. And you can see that when you come to the museum. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a serendipitous thing. Andrea and I went to Kutztown to Renninger's, where they have big radio swap meets twice a year. So we went before we started curating, just to kind of put the word out to people that this was going to be happening. And Andrea, do you want to tell what happened?
Sure. I walked up to this to a booth, and I was looking at some radios and started speaking with somebody there and told him what we were involved in. And he asked me, is Donna Acera here? And I said, well, she's in the other pavilion. She's coming over shortly. Turns out Jarrett Brown, who works at Lehigh, was a former student of Donna's, and he got interested in collecting radios because of her class that he took.
Because at the college, I still teach and have been teaching for quite a while the history of broadcasting and radio workshop. And the first class he enrolled in was radio workshop. And I had a collection of antique radios in the hall of the building that we have the production facilities in. So he and I would talk about old radios after class. And I knew him as he went through the program. And I knew that he got an internship with Jolly Joe Timmer at WKAP. So that's how, fast forward, he works with Jolly Joe for several years. And then when Jolly Joe Timmer... when the station closes doors, mm-hmm. and all of that ephemera goes, mm-hmm. somehow the sign ends up with Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jarrett is the president of the radio club that was hosting the swap meet and the radio clinic.
And so the great thing is, when I connected with Jarrett at Renninger's at the swap meet. It was like, you know, two old friends just catching up after all these years. But he said, I have some crystal sets from the Bethlehem Radio Company. And I said, what? Wait, there was a Bethlehem Radio Company across from the Just Born Candy Factory, where that is today on Stefco Boulevard, is a park. And that used to be the home in 1928, I think it was very short-lived, Bethlehem Radio Company. And they produced crystal sets.
Wow.
So Jarrett has a great collection of crystal sets, and of course they're on display at the museum.
The museum.
So that was an area that I did not have in my collection, so he was able to fill that in.
And a crystal set is?
Is a set that doesn't use battery, that takes all of its, it just pulls the radio waves in, and you connect to... some kind of power source, not a battery. It's just off the air.
Uh-huh.
And they still all work. I mean, Jarrett uses them to listen to the World Series.
Amazing.
So there was a Bethlehem Radio Corporation that produced the crystal sets. And was that all? That they you said they weren't very long-lived.
That's it. They had two models and several different colors of one of the models. So Jarrett's got them all, and they're all on display in the collection.
The other thing I find out about this exhibit is there is the teaching of the art of Foley. Now, a lot of people don't know what that is. It's sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever listened to Garrison Keillor and, of course, his program, you would see that there were people live on stage doing a horse sound or a sound of a clock. Mm-hmm. Now, there was also instruments. Have you any wood blocks or...
Oh, sure.
Oh, really?
We've got the coconut, the halves for the horse hooves. We've got the cornstarch, leather cornstarch pouch. Mm-hmm. And when you squeeze that, it sounds like you're walking in the snow.
Oh.
Okay, we've got ways to make other footsteps. The ice cubes in a glass is just dropping pencils into a glass, right? Okay. Sharpened pencils. It sounds like you're pouring ice cubes in. So people can... Mm-hmm. Can
so
use their imagination.
Can
they
this.
Can walk through rustling leaves. They can, they can spy some birds flying overhead with some plastic rubber gloves,
I wonder how they did Fibber McGee's closet, because every time you opened that closet, everything fell out.
And it was like for a full minute.
Yes.
And there was a whole crew of sound effects people that were just throwing the stuff towards the mic on top of one another.
Right. Wonderful. The Art of Foley. Wow. Just to learn a little bit about radio doing that would be a lot of fun, I would think.
Mm-hmm. So we, what is it, November 3rd? Just before we go to a break, I want to remind people that it's NMIH.org, National Museum of Industrial History.org, if you'd like to know more. 610-694-6644, obviously online. Go to the website. The exhibit has not only it's not only a fascinating exhibit, there's a lot of programming and a lot of events tied into it.
Now, actually, in addition to that, there's a lot more we're going to tell you when we come back, but you can see a 150-ton Corliss steam engine, a 20-foot-tall steam hammer. That's, you know, like a plunger. And learn the life of a factory worker in the 1900s, all at the National Museum of Industrial History. And we'll be back with Donna Acera and Andrea Zea right after this important message.
Good evening. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon on 88.1 WDIY. And this is our end of fiscal year membership drive, where we're trying to raise money to bring in support for this program, Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. And in addition, in particular, to raise some money for some much needed capital expenditures for some equipment improvements here at WDIY. In particular, some significant digital improvements, which will give you increased listening pressure and pleasure and increased accessibility to WDIY. So we're asking you for your support, and you can do that by making a call to 610-758-8810 or going securely online at wdiy.org. And I'd like to give thanks to Richard from Whitehall for making an extra gift. Yeah, extra gifts are really welcome. New members in particularly if you're listening to WDIY only the last couple of years and you've not yet become a member, but any form of gift, please show your support for WDIY, and thanks in advance. And we'll be back to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon in just a moment.
And, of course, from all of us here at Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, thank you, Richard, for that generous contribution to us. Thank you. This is WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, and we are chatting today with Andrea Zea and Donna Acera, both who have bring us great news from the National Museum of Industrial History right by the steel stacks here in Bethlehem.
We're talking about the Don't Touch That Dial radio exhibit and programming. And while we were off taking a little break there for a moment, you guys mentioned another collection that sounded interesting.
And there are two other collections,
okay.
One being that from WDIY, which is on display at the museum. So we want to thank WDIY for being a wonderful sponsor for Don't Touch That Dial. On display, we have the portable DJ setup that was fondly called the coffin. And this was taken around to community events when the radio station was in its formative years. So the people have been really enjoying looking at that and a lot of the early albums that came with it. And another very special collection that is on display belongs to Dr. Dan Schwartzman. So he has really filled in the gaps with some incredible, incredible radios.
So I met Dan Schwartzman. I was on a flight to Chicago probably about 10 years ago, and I got up to use the restroom, and on the way back, I saw a man sitting with a laptop open, and on the screen were old radios. And I jumped into my seat, and I said to the person I was traveling with, there's a guy back there who I think collects old radios, and I'm going to have to meet him. So I worked up the courage, and I went. I pretended I had to use the restroom again and walk back there. And I said, I see you have old radios. Are you perhaps a collector? And it turns out I knew his name as a collector but had never met him. And so the person that he was showing his radios to took my seat. I sat down in that guy's seat. And Dan and I talked the whole way to Chicago about old radios. And he said, you're going to have to come over to my house when you get back into town. And it's unbelievable how many radios Dan has. Mm-hmm. There might be 400 or 500
oh, wow.
radios. His home is beautiful, and he's got just rooms with walls full of old radios. And so I knew that when Andrea asked me about this exhibit, that to fill in, to really tell the story of radio, we had to bring Dan in because he has Catalan radios from the 1940s.
Wow.
And Bakelite, you know, some like pre-Bakelite. And he has... For instance, you'll see a Feta Bullet radio there, which is one of the most highly collectible radios for collectors.
And why would that be? What's special about that radio?
They retain their color.
Oh, okay. All right.
So they don't look like they faded. Whereas the Bakelite can fade and discolor, the Catalan looks as good as it did, you know, in the window when you shopped for it.
I have to ask, we're running out of time, sadly, but just really quickly, why? Why did you start collecting? Why the physical object? Like, I understand the importance of the experience of radio, and this exhibit is such a full-fledged exploration of all that, which is glorious. Why the physical radio?
To me, they're so beautiful, and I grew up in a home full of radios because my father was a ham radio operator, and
okay.
I would sit down in his basement ham radio shack, and I would stare at these really coolly designed radios from the 1940s and 50s in his ham shack while he used Morse code and talked to people all over the world, and that whole thing fascinated me. And then he gave me my first transistor radio. I remember it was a red Lloyd's or something like that when I was a kid. And then from that moment on, radio was just a big part of my life. I always had the radio on. And I think everyone likes looking at old radios. I think there's something beautiful about the design.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The design speaks to the decades mm-hmm. and, you know, the time period, the culture of the time. And so I think that radio is like eye candy. The radios themselves are like eye candy for me and for a lot of people. And that's why I collect them.
That's interesting. But the pictures and some of the images I've seen from the exhibit at the museum, which I'm looking forward to seeing, are gorgeous. And I hadn't thought about that. How that you had said earlier, we were talking about radio as a shared cultural experience, but that actually the radio itself, the memories, the look, how we use them,
it
becomes
speaks
shared
to the
cultural
decade. When you look at those radios from the 40s, it speaks to that, you know, just that design,
the aesthetics from the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, to hear Patti Page on a record singing was one thing. To hear it from a plugged-in radio in your home was another.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the sensation of transistorized radio. Mm-hmm. And I had a little pocket transistor radio, and I thought that was the greatest thing that God ever made.
Mm-hmm. Because now you could take radio with you wherever
right.
you
That's
went.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's coming up again before we go? The exhibit runs through November 3rd.
It does. Yes.
Other programming. I'm excited about the radio players, the actors, and other opportunities for folks to not just see the exhibit, but to. We've talked a little bit about the radio repair extravaganza.
Right.
What's that sound? Is that still coming up?
So how do amplifiers work? That's in August 17th. We also have Museum Day Live in September. So this is an opportunity for people to come to the museum free of charge and explore the radio exhibit, and then also some of our other galleries as well. So we are focusing on radio this year, but we do have other events happening. So we will be visiting the Morris Canal next.
Right.
And there's a very special field trip that's happening on June 30th. So you can look online and find out more information about
that.
And
I see there's an engineering summer camp. I mean,
oh,
there's
yes.
a lot
I
going
to
on.
That.
Yes.
The summer camp part one and two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for kids. 4, 5, and 6 year olds, I think.
And a little bit older.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's super. Thank you for doing that.
And the Museum Day Live on September 21st, again, we'll remind folks, looks extraordinarily exciting. In conjunction with Don't Touch That Dial, 100 Years of Radio, you will be able to try your hand at operating a ham radio, test your speed with Morse code, participate in texting versus telegraph competitions, and a lot more. Is there anything... I don't. What surprised you most about the exhibition or people's responses to it? Just curious.
I would
or what's
say
been pleasurable.
Yeah, everybody has a radio story, mm-hmm. so this really relates. So you were just relaying some of your personal stories, but everybody, it just brings a smile to everybody's face. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And what surprises me is how younger people don't really know the story of radio, and their minds are blown when they learn that radio was, that the sound effects were live, and that sort of thing existed.
Yes. The National Museum of Industrial History, incidentally, is located on the Steel Stacks campus on the former Bethlehem Steel site. So you'll want to certainly get there. The museum houses over 200 artifacts from across the world, and also artifacts on loan from the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. So here we are at the end. I'm sorry, I want to talk to you more. Thank you, Donna and Sarah, guest curator, and Andrea Zia as the curator of collections for the National Museum. We thank you very much. And special thanks to our radio cowboy engineer, Bill Doltermont-Smith, who has been pushing buttons, sliding dials, and been the voice of radio since at least 1895. Oh, no, it was 1905. No, 1955. Well, whatever. Thank you, Bill.